abandoned any argument that she is a danger to persons or property. And the judge found that any risk of flight would be ameliorated by a $20,000 bond. Her family has been ready and willing and able to pay that bond. And as you mentioned, the government has twice invoked this automatic stay provision to keep her detained while we appeal. Her legal team recently filed a status request for a status conference in federal court so that we can get her case again in front of a different judge and again argue for her release. Lakha should never have been detained, and she certainly should not be detained nearly 1 year later, especially not following this seizure. Her health is at great risk if she remains in custody.
And can you explain on what grounds the government is holding her? Trisha McLaughlin, spokesperson for DHS, said Ms. Cordia has been found to be providing financial support to individuals living in nations hostile to the U.S.
Yes, the Department of Homeland Security in this case has argued that sending remittances to beloved family members is somehow a danger or against the law. There is no law that forbids people in the United States from sending remittances, sending what little money they've saved up to their beloved family members abroad. Tens of thousands of immigrants do this every day across the United States, and Lakha is no different. She's lost more than 200 members of her family to the genocide in Gaza. And what little money she was able to save working as a waitress in Paterson, New Jersey, she sent to family members whose houses and businesses had been bombed by the Israeli military. She did what all of us would do to support our family members who are struggling. And the government has tried to weaponize that and use it against her, but they've been unsuccessful. The immigration judge saw right through that argument and ordered her release on bail, notwithstanding that argument by the government.
Where could the Trump administration deport her to, Sarah Sherman Stokes?
So the government has argued that she should be removed to Israel. The judge found that she would be persecuted in Israel and actually granted her something called withholding of removal, saying that it would not be safe for her to be sent back to Israel because it is more likely than not that she would be persecuted there. The government is now appealing that ruling, and so the litigation continues on the merits of her case.
Has Colombia weighed in, even if she wasn't a student there?
To my knowledge, Colombia has not weighed in. I, on one level, find that unsurprising. They haven't weighed in to support or defend, any or at least not many of the folks that have been arrested at the protests and mobilizations there. Lakha is like so many others, like Mahmoud Khalil, like Rumeysa Ozturk, like many others who have spoken out for Palestine, who have called for an end to the genocide, who have called for a ceasefire. She's exercising her constitutionally protected free speech rights. But no, I don't see Colombia standing up to support her.
Finally, where exactly is she being held now?
She remains back at the Prairie Land Detention Center in Alvarado, Texas, where she is being held with hundreds of other people, including the women in her sort of dorm or bunk area, many of whom have ongoing and chronic health conditions just like her. And as she said in her press release, in her own words, this story isn't just about her. This story is about the many other women and men and people who are also confined in ICE custody and whose stories aren't being told. They too should be free.
Sarah Sherman Stokes, I want to thank you for being with us. She is the immigration lawyer for Lakha Cordia, associate director and clinical associate professor at the Boston University School of Law. Coming up, the Oscar-nominated Alabama Solution, a stunning new documentary taking viewers inside what's been described as America's deadliest prison system. Based on footage secretly recorded on cell phones by prisoners locked up in Alabama. We'll speak with the film's directors and a lawyer in Alabama who represents some of the men featured in the Alabama Solution. Stay with us. by Sunny Singh in our Democracy Now! Studio. On Monday, February 23rd, Democracy Now! Will be celebrating our 30th anniversary at the historic Riverside Church here in New York. Sunny Singh will be playing at the reception, and those in the program are Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, the Nobel laureate Maria Ressa, the singer-songwriter Michael Stipe, jazz legend Wynton Marsalis, the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Masab Abu-Toha, and more. See democracynow.org for more information. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to the Alabama Solution, the Oscar-nominated documentary that takes viewers inside what's been described as America's deadliest prison system. The film based on footage secretly recorded on cell phones by prisoners locked up in Alabama. Some of them featured in the film were recently sent to solitary confinement. This is the film's trailer.
I know you're grieving, but I want to tell you that your son was murdered. They sweep stuff underneath the rug all the time.
If you're an inmate in Alabama prison, you're probably praying every night that nothing bad happens to you. It's dangerous and volatile. It could explode at any moment.
I mean, it's corrupt. That's all you can say. It happens.
Finished.
What are we finished with?
Tell me.
Why?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hold on a minute. Police in here.
Oh, okay.
Don't talk.
We have record numbers of people leaving out of here in body bags. They don't want the public to see what's really going on the inside.
How can a journalist go into a war zone but can't go into a prison in the United States of America?
The state is settling one lawsuit after another. There's no consequences for their actions.
It's not the inmate that's killing them folks. It's for God.
There's an argument that there is some systemic problem within all of our facilities, and I wholeheartedly disagree with that.
How can you defend this?
One guard, he knew something. I could tell he was a liar.
We are going to pursue it based on the facts to the fullest extent that we're allowed.
Their biggest fear is to see us come together on one accord.
We got to take our power back. We have to come together and make a stand that our life is worth something.
I came to prison in 1985. I know these folks are too.
We have been taking life and death risk to get this information out, but we still can.
That's the trailer to The Alabama Solution, the HBO original documentary available to stream now on HBO Max. We're joined by three guests. Tiffany Johnson Cole is with us, civil rights and civil litigation attorney in Mobile, Alabama. She's a childhood friend and attorney for Robert Earl Counsel, who's known as Kinetic Justice. He's featured in the film. We interviewed him about 10 years ago. He is so often, for years, has been held in solitary confinement. We're also joined here in New York by the film's co-directors, Andrew Jarecki and Charlotte Kaufman. The two also worked together on the HBO series The Jinx. Andrew's also the director of the Oscar-nominated documentary Capturing the Freedmans. Welcome all to Democracy Now!, Andrew. Let's begin with you. Lay out the Alabama Solution, what you found when you went to Alabama, and how did you get in these prisons?
Well, it was kind of a miracle that we got access to the prisons, because prisons in the U.S. are kind of black sites. And, you know, we drive by these prisons and we see a little sign at the side of the road and we assume, well, whatever's happening back there, if it was really terrible, I guess I'd hear about it. But because journalists aren't allowed in these prisons, you actually don't hear about it. So I was interested in the Alabama prison system, and I took a sort of road trip to just go down there. And I met this prison chaplain, the first black prison chaplain in the history of Alabama. And he said, well, if you're interested, come in and, you know, you'll volunteer. And I said, well, we're filmmakers. They're not going to let us in there with cameras. And he said, well, just come in and we'll distribute food packages and meet the men and you'll see what's going on. And then when we went in, we managed to establish a relationship with a warden who said, well, you can come in and film like this revival meeting, which is a very beautiful Christian celebration. And when we went in to film that, which was unusual, the men started whispering to us that there were really terrible things going on that we weren't allowed to see. And they were curating our visit. And then eventually we get sort of nosy and we get thrown out. And it was after that that we discovered that there were sort of a network of men inside who had access to contraband cell phones. And there were these incredible leaders of a nonviolent protest movement who wanted to speak and had been speaking for years about it. And so that became a sort of a collaboration in a way where we were doing an investigation with their help.
I mean, this is astounding, Charlotte. Most of what we're looking at is cell phone footage taken by and narrated by the prisoners themselves. Where do they get the cell phones?
Well, many of the cell phones, you know, from our investigation observation, come in through the guards.
These are contraband cell phones.
Yes, yeah, and they've been in the system since around 2013, and the men in our film have been using them as a way to overcome the secrecy that shrouds all prisons in the U.S. since that time. But it is interesting that you know, a lot of the phones are brought in by guards or with the permission of guards, even though they're then being used to document and expose things that the guards may be doing or the administration may be doing.
So let's go to a clip from the Alabama Solution. This is you, our guest, filmmaker Charlotte Kaufman, receiving a call from Melvin Ray, who's a prisoner from prison.
Would a regular phone call be better?
No, because it does not allow us to just be ourselves, you know. When we present our stories, we want to present our whole self, not just our voice. We're in these walled-off secret societies. These are state institutions. But it's one of the only state institutions that the public or the media has no access to. How can a journalist go into a war zone but can't go into a prison in the United States of America?
The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that wardens can effectively deny journalists access to prisons by citing safety and security concerns.
Like, I can witness a murder. We could be all sitting here and witness a murder. And the media, they can't even come on the state property.
That's, again, a clip from the Oscar-nominated Alabama Solution. Andrew Jarecki, what you show with these films, I mean, you have this prisoner saying, I could witness a murder. Journalists cannot come in. It is astounding to think about this. They can go to war, but they can't come into prisons run by the U.S. government.
Well, there's no question that the, you know, any authoritarian administration does not want you to see what's going on inside. That's one of the reasons why Alex Preddy got killed, right? It's because he was using a cell phone, which they then described as a weapon. So when you have a secretive system, they can't really continue to do what they're doing if there's enough public pressure, which is one of the reasons why Alabama is so anxious about this film. The governor didn't come out and say anything about it for around a year. And then when the film got nominated, she immediately came out with a statement sort of discrediting the film and saying, actually, she's been the best governor running the best, you know, best effort to try to improve prisons of any governor in the history of Alabama. Interesting distinction.
But I would also say it's not just Alabama. It's all across the country. We spend $80 billion a year on prisons and jails and incarcerate 2 million people. And yet the public's not allowed to see in and evaluate whether it is the system is fulfilling its mandate. And so I think what Melvin is trying to tell us is, you know, we should be demanding transparency and evaluating whether these systems are actually serving us or causing great harm.
I want to go to another clip from the Alabama Solution. Roll it. Roll it. Roll it. The clip begins with text messages from a prisoner named Melvin Ray writing, I have some information for you. Word is an inmate got beaten real bad at Donaldson Prison, sent UAB Hospital ICU. Melvin said the man's name was Stephen Davis.
We're looking for Stephen Davis. We think he's in the ICU.
We're looking in the hospital right now. Someone has a cell phone, and the elevator doors open, and they're going down the hallway. They're clearly looking for the room where Stephen is. And then they see a room that says Davis, and they look through the curtains. The curtains are closed.
It's the one.
Not a lot.
If you could go out to the waiting room, or I can help you by calling, but I'd prefer you not stand in front of
me. Okay, sure.
Thanks.
Sure. We should find his family.
Charlotte, that was you saying you were looking through the curtain and saying it's a body bag?
Yes, Andrew and I were both at the hospital that day. And the reason, you know, we got this text message that informed us that someone had been beaten and taken to the hospital. And the reason we immediately went to the hospital is because from our investigation and our research, we knew that often the prison system doesn't tell family members about what happened or doesn't report anything publicly until sometimes weeks later. And by that point, the story of what actually occurred can be very muddled. So in that scene, we're trying to stay on top of the information and begin an investigation into what we find out is the killing of a man at the hands of a correctional officer.
Let's go to another clip from the Alabama Solution. In this clip, an anonymous prison staff member calls Sandy. She's the mother of Stephen Davis, who was killed when incarcerated at Donaldson Correctional Facility. She wears oxygen, and so she has to take some time to get this call.
Later that evening, an unidentified staff member from Donaldson Prison calls Sandy.
Hello? I'm sorry. I'm on oxygen, so I had to take a minute there.
Okay, well, I understand.
Who's this?
Well, don't, you know, I'm just, I know you're grieving and mourning, and I wanted to tell you that your son was beaten to death by an officer. That was a murder. You know, they sweep stuff underneath the rug all the time about this.
I called the warden this afternoon. An hour later, there was a statement on the news that he rushed out of his cell with two homemade weapons and attacked them.
A plastic knife. They always come up with something to justify excess brutality and use of force.
Andrew Jarecki, we're watching Sandy, Davis's mom, Stephen Davis's mom, get this call. Who is it from? Where she's told her son has been murdered by guards.
Yeah, I mean, we know who the call came from, and we were just being discreet in the film because it's very rare to have a whistleblower who's on the staff at the prison tell somebody the truth of what happened. But I think this is a person who has a higher character than a lot of other people who witness things like this in the prison, and he felt compelled to reach out to the mother of somebody who he had learned had been murdered at the hands of corrections officers. So he was seeing the story that the prison was putting out, which was that Stephen had attacked guards, which is absurd, and immediately felt like he had to call the mother and say, look, at least you should know this.
I mean, the picture, the photograph, and Charlotte, you can talk about this photograph they have of Stephen Davis's head. Who took it? How horrifying it is.
Yeah, so Stephen's brother, Brandon, took a photo when, as he explains, the guards were out back sleeping at the hospital because while Stephen was in ICU, the prison officials made sure there was a presence at the hospital to let the family know and to let Stephen know, just in case he woke up, that they were watching. And they told Sandy and and Stephen's brother, you cannot come into the room with Stephen. But while the guards were away, Stephen's brother snuck a photo. And I'll also say we met Stephen's dad as well. And the dad, when we were initially going to speak to the dad, he said, are you from the news? Because the prison told us that if we speak to the news, they won't give us back the body. So this idea of sort of hiding what's happening in the prisons and even hiding bodies, you know, is very striking.
You talk about the staff at the hospital. Let's go to another clip of the Alabama Solution where we hear from former correctional officers Stacey George and Quante Cockrell. The clip ends with the prisoners themselves.
Correction officers should be the most reliable, trustworthy. You really want people that'll do the right thing when nobody's watching. But in Alabama, you don't have that.
Every day I thought I should be participating in this. There's just so much stuff happening there. So now there's a lot of officers leaving.
Sometimes we have one officer for 200-300 inmates. With the low staffing and the mandatory overtime, you've got officers that look like zombies.
Now look at this man in the queue sleep.
That's the queue. Ain't no police in the queue. None. Ain't no police in the dorm. Nowhere in the dorm.
Outside. Another clip from the Alabama Solution. I want to bring in our third guest, Tiffany Johnson Cole. Tiffany, you are a civil rights and civil litigation attorney. You're also a childhood friend and attorney for Robert Earl Counsel, also known as Kinetic Justice. We spoke to him 10 years ago, and we'll get to him in a minute. But talk about the lawsuit that you have brought.
Most recently, well, we had an initial lawsuit in 2021 wherein Robert Earl was assaulted by guards. And we since settled a portion of that lawsuit against the guards and actually went to a jury trial and won in Jefferson County against the medical provider. The most recent lawsuit, though, deals is a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction that deals with the transfer of Robert Earl, Raul, and Melvin between January 12th and 13th to the L dorm, which is located at Kilby, which is considered a highly restrictive area, often associated with intimidation. They were transferred between January 12th and 13th for what we believe was protected speech by people they associate with on the outside. And so that lawsuit is still pending.
I want to go to the backdrop of the Free Alabama movement, Andrew, going back 10 years to this strike that they led across the state. In fact, it went beyond that.
Well, I think it's most notable that these men have always observed peaceful protest movements, whether that's a labor stoppage, because, you know, that can be powerful. Alabama has $450 million a year in unpaid labor that they benefit from. So if the men undertake a work stoppage, it's a real threat to
this,
the way the system.
The prison. I mean, they're being directed, but
yes, but way beyond that. I think the average person thinks, okay, well, somebody is in prison. Maybe they're supposed to sweep up or they're supposed to serve a meal or something. I think what shocks people is that they're farmed out, not just to the governor's mansion. They work on road crews. They work on construction for the state. And beyond that, they're leased out to McDonald's and Burger King and the Hyundai Parts Company and the Budweiser distributorship. So it really is very—
And how much are they paid?
Well, in the film, you see one of the people who works in sanitation is being paid $2 a day, and they're charging the state of Alabama, the Department of Corrections is charging, you know, $10 or more per hour for these people. So it's a very, very lucrative thing. And the other thing the men will do sometimes is go on hunger strike. And so it's always peaceful, and yet the way the state deals with it is always through violence.
So I want to bring in Robert Earl's voice, also known as Kinetic Justice. About 10 years ago in 2016, we spoke to Kinetic Justice, co-founder of the Free Alabama Movement, about the prisoner strike.
These strikes are our methods for challenging mass incarceration. As we understand that the prison system is a continuation of the slave system, and which in all instances is an economical system. Therefore, for the reform and changes that we've been fighting for in Alabama, we've tried petitioning through the courts. We've tried to get in touch with legislators and so forth, and we haven't had any recourse. Therefore, we understood that our incarceration was pretty much about our labor and the money that was being generated in the prison system. Therefore, we began organizing around our labor and used it as a means and a method in order to bring about reform in the Alabama prison system.
That's Kinetic Justice Robert Earle. Back in 2016 on Democracy Now!, he was at Holman, I think, in Alabama at the time. Tiffany Johnson Cole, you grew up with him. I mean, he is a leader of this Alabama free movement.
Yes, he and I grew up together. And as a result of what he experienced when he became incarcerated, he and Melvin and other incarcerated persons joined together to create the Free Alabama Movement to basically call attention to the conditions that are inhumane that are being carried out in the name of the state. And so both Melvin and Robert Earle are extremely intelligent, strategic and legal minds. They have studied the law. It's always interesting to me how we can go back and debate some of the legal theories and some of their pleadings and some of their filings, but they have pretty much put themselves in harm's way in an effort to bring about change in a system that is truly cruel and inhumane.
I want to go to the title of the Alabama Solution. This is Alabama Governor Kay Ivey.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Please be seated. You heard me say this before, and I'll say it again. This is an Alabama problem that must have an Alabama solution. I look forward to working with each of you to solve it. I've asked Commissioner Dunn to build three new prisons that will transition our facilities from warehousing inmates to rehabilitating people.
So that's Alabama Governor Kay Ivey. And this, Andrew, is you questioning Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall.
I mean, I think we have a strategic plan in place. There's an argument that there is some systemic problem within all of our facilities, and I wholeheartedly disagree with that. We dare defend our rights. That is a motto of the state that I think matters. We have the opportunity to push back against what we think is an overreach of the Department of Justice. We don't necessarily embrace the fact that Washington, D.C. has all the answers. We want to be able to do it ourselves in ways that we think make sense for Alabama. And in fact, the governor's plan demonstrates that.
That's the Alabama Attorney General. As we wrap up, Andrew Jarecki.
Yeah. I mean, that experience of talking to him was just remarkable because it's a kind of government speak that is devoid of the humanity of it, right? Whether he's visited the Alabama prisons or not, sort of irrelevant. He is the person that's running the justice system in that state, and he's obviously doesn't believe that there's a problem.
30 seconds. Solitary confinement. Who's in, who's out right now?
Melvin Ray has been released. Robert Earle Counsel and Raul Poole are still in. And what I would just say is we made this film over 7 years, but the issue in Alabama's prison is still very urgent and very current. Since 2019, 1,500 people have died. And as you can see, they are threatened by voices that speak up. They are an authoritarian power that wants to quell dissent. That is what some of the people in our film are dealing with right now. And so I hope that people will watch, go to our website. There are ways to take action.
The website
is www.thealabamasolution.com.
Charlotte Kaufman and Andrew Jarecki, co-directors of the Oscar-nominated Alabama Solution. Attorney Tiffany Johnson Cole joining us from Alabama. Thank you so much for this incredible, epic work. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.